This is the Man in Line on location.
Pastor Mai, good afternoon. Welcome to St. Ninian's High School. We're live with the students of some from year 13 and some from year 12. St. Ninian's has got a fine, notable alumni, including Sam Barks was here, Christine Collister, the singer, Paul Quine, former member of the House of Keys, was here, Peter Kenyuk, the Olympic gold medalist, Frank Kermode, noted literary critic, professor of English literature, Charles Carouche, noted Manx politician, the first president of Tynwald, and the man who created Professor Bernard Quatermass. Nigel Neal used to attend St. Ninian's High School. As did Howard Kane, our own Howard Kane, who's with us today, making sure that we hear the voices of Hudson and Joanne and Riona and Farah and Alex as well. Riona, I want to come to you first. Let's talk about the Manx menstruation movement. Is that right?
Yeah, the Manx menstruation movement is basically a group of women who have made it their goal to make sure that the accessibility of period products is made more for everyone in the Isle of Man, because on the Isle of Man, we believe that subjects such as poverty or homelessness doesn't actually exist. We believe that the Isle of Man is a wealthy lower island, but there are people here who can say otherwise. And my mother works in the hospital, so when she comes home, she does tell me quite a bit, like, how many young girls are coming into her clinics because they can't afford menstrual products. And period poverty is a really big thing on the Isle of Man, and I'm really glad to see it's a bunch of women who are starting to create a movement for that.
What does the movement aim to do?
The movement aims to provide more period products for women, making it more accessible. I've seen that they've partnered up with gyms, public places, to make sure that they have period products that are free for women to use.
It's something we've heard a lot about, and you mentioned, you know, people think that everybody's rich on the Isle of Man, particularly, you know, people who are listening from across think everybody in the Isle of Man's a millionaire. So the thought that there are some young women on the Isle of Man who are going through this, and this is not dignified at all, is it? It's not right. Yeah. It's not respectful as well.
Yeah, I think it's quite a big issue, and it's taken quite a long time for this to be raised. But I'm glad that it's happening now, because more and more women of all ages are being helped now.
And you say your mum finds this in her work?
Yeah, she runs the Department for Obstetrics and Gynecology at the hospital, so she comes in contact with a lot of women. And obviously, when you get to know your patients, you speak to them, you can be open and honest with them. And some of them will explain that they are struggling. And my mum does all that she can to help those women, because as women, all we can do is support each other. This is a natural process, and I think it's quite sad that women aren't supported in this, and we have to pay for something that's not our fault.
So does anything happen within St. Ninian's? Is there any sort of facility within St. Ninian's for this?
Yes. So in sixth form, we have a few boxes that are full of menstrual products for women, but I think we need to start bringing in more reusable products, because reusable menstrual products not only benefit women financially, but also emotionally and environmentally as well, because not many people know about the benefits of reusable products. You see, disposable products are only a one-time use, but they actually take 500 to 800 years to break down. Yeah. And they're so expensive, women monthly will spend quite a lot. And maybe yearly I spend maybe £300 on menstrual products, which I think is quite sad, because as the Isle of Man, it's so small, we should be doing everything to support everyone on the Isle of Man.
Okay, Hudson?
Yeah, so I know for your junior achievement, so junior achievement company competition is something that sick formers can get involved in when they form a company with their friends, and they can make a business and get an idea for it. For your business, you did something to do with reusable period products. Is this what inspired you to do that?
Yeah, I think the Manx menstrual movement has definitely started a trend for all women, and I feel like not many women know about the benefits of reusable. So with Junior Achievement, because it's quite a large company and loads of press gets involved and there's a lot of like awareness, I think I can spread that message through that as well.
Where would you like to see this movement be then in 5 years' time?
Well, hopefully I would like to see it expand globally as well. I think it was Scotland. Scotland that did that now do free menstrual products, but those are all disposable, and I don't think many people know about the actual, like, how harmful they are, not only for women's health because they have toxins, they have irritants, but also for the environment because they break down within like 800 years and they only last one time, whilst reusable products can be used up to 6 years, but they break down within 6 to 8 years as well.
Okay, Joanne's next to you as well. You're in year 13. What plans for university do you have?
So I'm currently looking at going on to study law at university. Fingers crossed, hopefully somewhere like Leeds, York or Liverpool. Haven't fully made up my decision yet. Now, I want to go study law, which means that... that I want to become a lawyer.
Right.
And when I come back to the Isle of Man, I am looking to qualify and sit the Manx Bar. On the Isle of Man, I've taken part in work experience, some open days. I've even done lots of research for my own personal time.
Where does the ambition come from? Are they lawyers?
No, actually, no one in my family is a lawyer. My mum actually originally wanted to be a lawyer. But where it all actually came from was that years and years and years ago, I was in primary school. And we had a judge come in to speak to us, and he was talking about what his life is like in the legal profession. And I remember him saying, if you want to make more money, become a lawyer. So that's sort of where it came from, and I say that's definitely what's driven me to come where I am now. And I'm looking at, hopefully, after my university degree, going on to do a master's degree and hopefully a PhD, and then return to the Isle of Man, sit the Manx Bar, and practice as a criminal defence lawyer.
Okay. And Hudson, you're going to be leaving St Ninian's later on this summer. Are you heading for university?
Hopefully also.
Whereabouts?
Hopefully Durham, but I've got offers from York, Leeds and Queen's University Belfast.
Who's going to be making the decision?
Who? What do you mean?
Are you going to decide where you're going to go?
Durham's currently deciding whether I'm getting an offer. But
right,
yeah,
okay. After that. And what will you be reading?
A law,
okay.
Like Joanne.
With a view to doing what?
I have quite a few interests in law. I like intellectual property law. I'm interested in human rights law, and that could take me, I think, further afield than what I expect right now, which is to go and pass the bar exam in the United Kingdom.
Okay, and Farah, you're in year 12, so next year will be your final year. Have you got any plans for university and a career in prospect?
So I have lots of interest in like politics, law, economics, but I think in terms of uni, I'm not fully set on it. I actually want to go down an apprenticeship route, potentially in London. I think, like, you know, university, yes, it's very popular. People do take that route. I think it's definitely becoming a lot less common that people are going to uni. And I think that's a good thing. I think apprenticeships do value, like, skills more than grades. And I think that should really, really be emphasized.
Sort of apprenticeship?
Well, I think maybe some type of law apprenticeships or potentially some, like, IT apprenticeships. That will get me down into the business route or politics. I think there's lots and lots of opportunities.
Okay, and does this come from, is this a personal ambition of yours? Was it drawn out through school, parents, family? Where's it come from?
It's just a personal ambition, really. Like, no one in my family really is into politics too much and law and, you know, my interests. But I just think, you know, in today's world, it's just so important to be updated with politics.
What sort of politics?
Sorry?
What sort of politics?
I'd say, like, international relations and just where the UK stands, and just how lucky we are to be here and how that differs from the UK being on the Isle of Man.
Okay. And Alex is next to you as well. Alex, you were mentioning before that you went down to Tynwald, didn't you? You saw the Speaker of the House of Keys, Mr. Watterson.
Yeah, so I'm actually chair of the Tynwald Youth Select Committee. So we have a meeting once a month at the Legislative Building. Our focus is on housing, like affordability of housing. We will be producing a report that we brought to Tynwald. Last week I was in the Legislative Building along with David Cowan. We met the now ex-Chief Minister of Jersey.
We're talking about housing, and that's a big problem on the Isle of Man. Have you got a view on housing?
Yeah, so although the Isle of Man government is already doing, well, some things to try and make housing more available to lower incomes or to first-time buyers, there is the first-time buyer scheme. We just don't know how efficient it is. I heard, I think it was Tim Crookle, he was saying on the radio yesterday that they had 40, like, people that they could successfully put through from the first-time buyer scheme. But if you look at it, 40 people, is not actually a great number, and that's how many people, we don't know how many people have actually applied for it. There was also the mid-rent scheme, which is in Colby, and that's worked quite effectively.
The one where you pay partial rent and you save to get a house, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So in the committee, we're trying to see ways that, in which we could make housing more affordable. At the minute, there's a set amount of houses that have to be made affordable. But how do you define what affordable is? I think an issue regarding why young people are moving away after university, also the house prices. I think the average house price over here is it 350,000? You have to correct me if I'm wrong. But obviously, if you're a first-time buyer, for assistance as well, it's so hard to get the deposit because the rent's so high as well. Like the rent, what you pay for what you get, is so high to try and save a deposit whilst also paying your rent, which is high, is just, yeah.
I mean, would you want to buy a house on the Isle of Man? Are you off to university, by the way?
Yeah, so my ambition is to do medicine at university, and hopefully I would like to come back here to still be involved in politics, because I do quite like island politics. And my aim, obviously, would be to buy a house eventually. Obviously, I'm only 16 at the minute, but I think as a committee, we're trying to look at the whole youth.
So whereabouts are you off to uni, do you know?
Pardon?
Whereabouts, which university?
Well, either in Edinburgh or down south of London.
And what branch of medicine?
Well, after I would do medicine, because that's the degree itself, yeah. Specialised course in cardiology, that's the ambition anyway.
And just tell me, what led you to becoming involved with the committee, the Timwell Committee?
Well, from a young age, I've always been interested in politics. It mainly started with UK politics, because most of my family's from the UK, so I was watching Question Time. And then I applied it, because obviously I lived over here, got an interest into it. And then when I saw the opportunity for the Youth Committee, I saw that as my gateway to Isle of Man politics.
Riona, you were going to say something.
Oh, yeah. So I'm part of the Youth Select Committee as well, and I think it's really good that there is that opportunity, because we are the future of the Isle of Man, if you think about it. And housing is a really
big... You're going to pay all the tax, Riona.
Yeah, housing is a really big crisis, as me and Alex discovered together, as well as the rest of the team, because we had to do quite a lot of research. And it's actually quite shocking how bad the Isle of Man is concerning housing, because the waiting list for council houses, as well as the accessibility of them, there's loads of derelict houses that aren't being used and they have no purpose, but there's quite a lot of people that are still waiting to be put in a council house. And as well as that, the actual quality of the houses don't match the prices, so they're quite overpriced for such basic standards of living. And most of the time in the council houses, one of our members actually has personal experience there, and she's brought in evidence and photos of how bad the standards are and how quick it takes for things to be fixed.
Alex?
So at the minute we're doing call for evidence, so it is on the Timwood page if anybody listening would like to fill in the survey if they've had any experiences with the first time buyer scheme or rental or the rental market.
Okay, and do you know what the website is? It Timwood.org?
Yes, Timwood.org.
Timwood.org. Tell me, Farah, are you on social media?
Yeah, I am on social media. I use social media quite a lot.
What are you on?
I'm on Snapchat, Instagram, TikTok, pretty much everything that people my age are on.
Facebook? The old person?
Not Facebook, no.
That's just for old people now, isn't it?
You could say so, yeah.
I think everybody knows Facebook is just for old people.
So
tell me about Snapchat. If anybody doesn't know what Snapchat is.
Well, I mean, it's just an app where people communicate via sending... they call them snaps, the pictures to each other. There's also, you can call people on there, video call. It's just a very common way people communicate, I guess.
You can be honest with us now, Farah. How much time do you spend on social media?
I do spend a lot. I do spend a lot of time on social media, but
minutes, hours?
I don't know. I'd say I'd spend a substantial amount of hours a day, but I do think a lot of that is... and tied in with education, I do think, with AI and things.
Are you on Twitter?
I'm not on Twitter, no.
Okay. Joanne?
Come linking back to Twitter, it's now known as X.
Elon Musk,
yeah, he's taken that over. I'm definitely quite active on there. I use Twitter, Instagram,
Snapchat. Do you post
on Twitter? No, I do not personally post on Twitter. I'm mainly there just to sort of look at what's going on, keep up to date. TikTok, Pinterest. I'm trying to think of all the
Facebook,
social medias.
Are you on Facebook?
I am actually on Facebook.
Oh, wow.
But that's only because I had a birthday party to go to and the group was on Facebook, so I made a Facebook account. But I'd say definitely social media is definitely a great tool for people our age. I find lots of people in classrooms, so for example, even all the prefects, so all the Year 13 prefects at St. Ninian's are all in a group chat together where we all discuss all the events we're putting on. And, well, YouTube, that's a great social media site. I like that for lots of my business revision. You can get loads of good videos on there. And then on there you find videos by Tutor to You, and they do almost every subject. It's really a useful tool for revision, I think.
Do you play games?
I do.
You're a gamer.
I am rather an avid gamer, I would say.
What's your game of choice?
Well, this is going to sound rather silly. It's quite a stereotypical, let's say, women's game, lots of people say. I play quite a lot of The Sims 4. I've got Nintendo Switch, play quite a lot of Five Nights at Freddy's. As rather juvenile as that sounds, as someone who's 18 years old.
How much time a week do you spend gaming?
Not all the time, usually when I get a chance. Me and my mum are quite a fan of some of, you know, the classic games, stuff like Crash Bandicoot, so occasionally, you know, me and my mum have a kickback, have a bit of family time. I've even had her on Nintendo Switch bowling, which was quite interesting. We had all the family around that on Boxing Day. I think it was me, my mum, my grandfather, my grandma, had a great time teaching them how to basically use the new technology.
Do you watch any television?
I do. I watch quite a bit of TV with my mum. Love a bit of Saturday Night Takeaway with Ant and Dec. Anything really with Ant and Dec, I'm quite a big fan of.
Hudson, are you a gamer?
I used to be quite the gamer, not as much anymore. I have to admit.
What was your game?
What was my game?
COD?
Oh, there were quite a few.
COD?
COD, Call of Duty. Yeah. I used to play a bit of that, not too much anymore. I've tried to step away from gaming because I think my philosophy on it is now I'm becoming an adult and I've got this whole world to interact with. Everything that like games were inspired by is in the real world, so why wouldn't I try and step into the world where all that has come from more? So that's my philosophy going forward, and that's why I've tried to reduce playing video games and stuff.
Do you post on anything, Snapchat or anything?
Not very much. I just use it to communicate more than anything. I'm not a very big like poster and stuff like that.
So. Riona? Are you on Snapchat?
I'd probably say I shouldn't deserve a phone because I kind of I post too much, and I think probably addicted, but it's a work in progress.
Are you a gamer at all?
I think the only game I play is Call of Duty, but mobile, because I don't know how to work my Xbox, so.
Just tell me about, social media is a great force, but there is a dark side to social media as well. I just wonder how you, as a young woman, cope with that. Has it ever affected you?
I think social media does have its positives, but it also has quite a lot of negatives, because I think we find more and more young people are comparing themselves to people on social media, when people on social media only post their positives. You never see people posting their negatives or the down days. So everyone's got this mindset like, yes, I need to look like her, I need to be rich, I need to have this by this age, but it's really unrealistic. And I think it just stresses young people out as well. But bullying is also quite a big thing that's happening now, and I think it's kind of switched more to cyberbullying. So people are more self-conscious about what they post or who views what they post and everything.
Farah?
I think there's another really big negative impact of social media, which I think is fake news and misinformation. And I think it's very hard for us as young adults to like navigate what is true, what's not true, what should I believe, what should I follow.
Where do you get your news from?
I get my news from a range of sources, I guess. I go off Instagram, that's very much catered for a kind of our generation, but then I, you know, read BBC News, Sky News. I try to read as much news sources as I can, just to get a perspective from every angle.
When was the last time you read a newspaper? A proper
newspaper.
A paper newspaper.
it must be many years ago. I don't think
Have you ever bought a proper newspaper?
I don't think I have. No, I just think that's it's just not Kate for us anymore.
Alex, have you ever bought a newspaper?
Yeah, I think I'm the opposite to that, because obviously I do take interest in politics. Obviously read the Courier, but also like the Manx Independent, especially when the budget came out.
Do you buy them yourself, or does that come to their house?
Well, if I'm, because most of the time when I go shopping to Tesco, I'm normally with my mum. So I'll just say to her, can we get the paper? If it's something I find of interest. So I just commenting on the social media aspect. A lot of time I think to myself, oh, I should just delete social media, because I'd get so much more done, like productivity wise, if I didn't have social media.
It is addictive, isn't it?
I think a lot of it, in other terms, is more like brain rot. You're just watching things, you just don't have any meaning. And then they're just taking up space. And I think it does have an impact on our capacity to think for ourselves. Like we see that, and because we're just seeing that instead of, I suppose, learning more, that just takes up more space in your brain.
Another cat video on YouTube.
Yeah, like I think as well with fake news, obviously if you're watching things on TikTok, for example, they're just on, I don't know, made up things that aren't really realistic, and then something like fake news comes up because you've been just watching, scrolling through different things. I think it's harder to distinguish between what might be real and what might not be real because you've just been watching.
Okay, do you watch television news?
Yes, at times.
Actual television, you know, sit down and turn the TV in, or do you get it off your phone?
No, I used to watch television news, but I think some of that you have to kind of take with a pinch of salt, good for how things are portrayed. So I'd say I try to get my news like sourced from a range of different materials.
Okay, Joanne?
I'd like to link back to the talk about social media. Obviously, social media, as we've discussed, has got its negatives, fake news being one of them. And X, formerly known as Twitter, has got this excellent function now where if it's suspected that something is fake news, it pops up underneath it that says, oh, this may not be true, and then they explain why. Especially during COVID-19, if you scrolled through anything, it would say, click here for like government information about COVID-19. And linking back to COVID-19 and social media, definitely a lot of people in lockdown, that's how they coped with things like social media. I know just as bad as anyone, I'd finish my schoolwork for the day and I'd, you know, hop on the game as you do. But a great thing about that is it allowed for me to communicate with my friends. So I found a lot of people who were older than me, you know, people sort of my mum's age and older. Yes, they can FaceTime all their friends, which is great and all, but you can't really do any activities of that age online, because I feel like all the games and things were marketed to people my age. So I found lots of me and my friends, we coped a lot better because we could all call each other and go online and play a video game together. So that way we were actually doing something that we could possibly do even if we were in the room with them, which definitely helped everyone sort of not feel quite as closed off.
Did COVID affect your academic life? I mean, has there been a legacy of COVID?
I personally think that COVID has altered definitely the way that people perform. For me personally, I'd say it didn't overly have too heavy of an impact on my personal academics. I'm personally someone who's very ambitious, so I work quite hard anyway, but I definitely say that for some things you do have to work harder. So, but it's also led to great things, sort of how you know how to research better online, because when you're at home doing revision, because the teacher wouldn't be there like during COVID.
Hudson, did COVID affect you much?
I'm a bit like Joanne in the way that the teachers set out the work and it is realistically your choice whether you went to do it or not. So I got a lot of the work done. But I have to say, for I know a few of my friends, they didn't get as much work done.
Some people didn't cope, did they?
No, they didn't, no.
I mean, and how did you, but it was just your personality that helped you cope, was it?
Yeah, I've always felt like kind of a pressure to, from nobody but myself, to get work done.
Okay. I want to talk about AI, artificial intelligence, and where you think the future is. Is there much, do you learn much about AI within school?
No, not really. We don't learn much about AI. I mean, it's really just a this year and last year kind of thing. I mean, it really came to fruition with ChatGPT. I'm sure everybody knows what ChatGPT is. It's a bot where you can type anything and it gives you an answer. So obviously the main thing you think of when you think of that in a school is essays, people not writing their own essays and plagiarism. But I haven't really used it for that. The way I use it is if I'm So I do government and politics, and that's about thinking of arguments and counter-arguments. So I'll kind of play devil's advocate with it. I'll kind of shoot an argument at it and then say, what would be a counter-argument to this? So it's not doing the work for me. It's expanding my thinking on topics more than anything. And I think the worries people have about AI with concerning job reductions, you know, losing your job or whatever, I don't exactly think that will happen. I think AI, very much in the same way as computers have done, will just improve and innovate the way people can do their jobs and make them much more.
They tell us that AI is going to take over the world.
No, I don't think so. We've just had a seminar. One of our teachers has done a seminar on AI. He's a computer science teacher, and he's very informative on it. And one of the analogies he made is a truck's a very dangerous weapon if it's given to the wrong person and they drive down a street full of people, in the same way that if you put AI in the hands of bad people, it's the people doing the bad things. It won't be the AI. And I think one thing we need to look out for, especially, I think we're going to really see maybe a more dangerous side of AI is in the next US election. That's probably where we'll see a big misuse of AI.
I was going to come to that with Riona then. How do you stop the wrong people getting hold of AI?
Well, realistically, you can't do that much. Obviously, governments can put in places like policies and laws, but they can't actually control an individual who's inside the home or wherever they are and what they do.
So, the forthcoming American election has been mentioned. Have you got any views on Joe Biden and Donald Trump?
Oh.
You have.
They're both very unique individuals, I would say, intellectually. I don't have anything else to say. I just think neither of them should be there, but obviously, yeah.
Alex, they're going to be in charge of the free world. One of them is going to be president of the United States. Any views on Trump and Biden?
I say I don't really keep up with American politics that much, but I think, without being discriminatory, the ages of them running, like, obviously the whole of the US, they're two quite old men. I think their perspectives on what life might be like for the younger generation of Americans, not even people my age, people in 30s, 40s, I don't know how well they'd be able to represent.
It used to be that people, years ago, the man called John Kennedy, he inspired America. He was a young Irish Catholic American and really gave America a sense of purpose and a sense of the future. Do you get that from Biden or Trump?
I don't think so. I think they probably haven't had much experience of what the average American life is. I mean, obviously Trump and most politicians have been brought up in like the wealth. They haven't really gone out looking for what life really is for some people.
What sport do you do?
I play hockey.
Who do you play hockey for?
Castown Hockey Club.
And how's the season going?
Oh,
just wait a moment. I think the Queen's arriving. We'll be back at St Ninian's in a moment.
And first am I, a very good afternoon. It's Ben and Beth here at Douglas City Hall as Her Majesty Queen Camilla is just arriving in front of us here on Ridgeway Street. We're accompanied by the sound of the Ellen Van Im Pipe Band as the royal car arrives in front of us as Her Majesty steps out. Beth, a huge amount of people here.
There really is. It's a little bit trade allure here. The crowds were quite slow to arrive, but they're certainly here now. The Union flag, the Manx flags waving, and Queen Camilla just being greeted by the Mayor of Douglas, Natalie Byron-Tier. To her right is Lieutenant Governor, who greeted her out of the car. There's a melee of media going inside to the town hall. What exactly is going to happen now, Ben?
Yes, Her Majesty is just on the steps, as you say, talking to the Lieutenant Governor. First of all, she was greeted at Ronald's Way about 20 minutes ago by the Lieutenant Governor, Lady Lorimer, also the Chief Constable of the Isle of Man, Russ Foster, and the recently appointed Captain of the Parish of Malou, Peter Quayle. Her Majesty now just walking up the steps into the City Hall. She's been greeted, as you say, by the Mayor, Natalie Byron-Tier, Council Leader Claire Wells is there, and Chief Officer Cathy Rice. And Her Majesty will now step inside to officially declare Douglas a city. And how this works is she has brought with her the letters patents. Now, this is an official document issued by the monarch, of course, that is the King, our Lord of Man. And I think we can safely assume if the King wasn't convalescing at the moment, of course, he stepped back from public duties for the time being to undergo his cancer treatment. We assume King Charles would have been here, and in his absence, the Queen instead delivering the letters patent, which will officially declare Douglas a city. And as we heard from Council Leader Claire Wells this morning on Breakfast, that is intended to be displayed so the public can see the very, very famous and hugely historical letters patent document.
And you will be able to go to the Manx Radio Facebook page. There are images on there, and this was captured live as the Queen arrived here. That beautiful car in front of us with the Royal Standard on top. If you're interested in what she's wearing, we didn't get quite the glimpse just yet, but a sort of turquoisey coat, black boots, looked very, very well tailored. In fact, she has been voted one of the best dressed European royals of 2024.
It's really interesting to see exactly how Her Majesty's style has changed since she became Queen. Of course, that was the 8th of September 2022 when the late Queen Elizabeth passed away, and immediately Charles became King and Camilla became Queen Consort, officially crowned King and Queen at that coronation service at Westminster Abbey last May. So, Her Majesty, as you can hear, an air of calm has just descended over Ridgeway Street in central Douglas as she steps inside to perform, we think, what will be a fairly short ceremony. She'll make a speech inside, and you'll be able to see video of that later on the Manx Radio Facebook page. In fact, we have just been live, so hopefully you've been able to watch as well the Queen arrive. And you're absolutely right. In the last couple of minutes, even more people have arrived behind us.
And we've got lots of school children here as well. And this will be a day that they always remember, because I remember 1989 when the Queen visited to open part of the Manx Museum. It was a day that is etched on your memory because it's a really significant occasion. So where we are standing is just on the junction of King Street, which is quite apt, and Ridgeway Street. As I say, we can see the royal car just in front of us, which is absolutely magnificent. If I knew more about cars, I'd be able to tell you more about it. Behind that, a Range Rover, and then another car behind that. Security, as you can expect, is very tight around Douglas, so there's a large police presence, a sea of yellow among the crowds. We can see a fire engine from Douglas Station just up the road. It's like everyone has turned out for this, Ben.
And it's really interesting when you think back. It was almost 2 years ago when it was officially announced that Douglas had been awarded city status. It was for the late Queen's Platinum Jubilee. Douglas applied, Peel did as well. There was that little bit of island competition, wasn't there, a couple of years ago as to which particular town, if any, would be awarded that city status. It was announced in May 2022, just a few weeks before that weekend of Platinum Jubilee celebrations, that Douglas had in fact been awarded city status, along with seven other towns across England, Wales, Northern Ireland and the Falklands, at Colchester, Doncaster, Milton Keynes, Dunfermline in Scotland, Wrexham in Wales, Bangor in Northern Ireland and Stanley in the Falkland Islands. The seven other towns that were conferred city status for the late Queen's Platinum Jubilee. It's just worth noting as well, what's going to... I can see a plaque coming out.
I can
out.
See a plaque. Now, there was some question about where the plaque was that the Queen will unveil. Well, we can now tell you that it's just been brought outside of the City Hall, as it is now, and it is covered in royal blue curtains. I don't know if the plaque's actually on it yet. Is it plaque on it?
I don't think so. Hopefully that will appear.
Yeah. It's a stand. A plaque stand has arrived.
They've got about 15...
with some lovely curtains. Yes. Hopefully someone's remembered to get the plaque. I think somebody's holding it, actually.
Yes. That looks decidedly like a plaque in that gentleman's hand there. So that will be unveiled by Queen Camilla when she exits the City Hall. She will unveil the plaque, and then there will be a short walkabout, which is something that, of course, the late Queen very much introduced at the start of her reign. But I think we could see from immediately almost the moment King Charles ascended to the throne, that was something they would continue, because the day after the late Queen passed away, the King and Queen Consort travelled back to London, and before they went through the gates of Buckingham Palace, if you remember, they stepped out of the royal car and did quite a lengthy walkabout to meet the crowds at Buckingham Palace there outside the gates. A number of them were singing God Save the King. And isn't it funny when you think back, less than 2 years ago, that moment when we first heard God Save the King. It was a strange moment.
It certainly was, and I think some people still find it hard to get used to, because when you're used to one thing for such a long time, what's lovely to see is we've got the crowds here, as I say, waving the Manx flags and the Union flags, and several of them have gifts to give to Queen Camilla, and we're going to talk to some of those people once they've spoken to Her Majesty afterwards. Also worth noting, they were around 7 minutes early, so we were expecting the royal party to arrive at 12:45, but they made good time and were here a little bit earlier. The motorcycle police outriders prompting their arrival and signalling that they were here.
As you mentioned, the Queen was slightly ahead of schedule. We assume she will still be here at the Town Hall to meet the crowds until about 1:30. That is when she is scheduled to depart Ridgeway Street and make the short journey to Oncombe, to Government House, where she'll be greeted by the Chief Minister, Alfred Cannon, the Deputy Chief Minister, Jane Poole Wilson, also the Speaker of the House of Keys, Ewan Watterson, and the President of Tim Ward, Lawrence Skelly. And I know there are a number of island residents and charity representatives who will be at Government House this afternoon to meet Her Majesty and tell her a little bit about their involvement in community life here. And also, there were a number of reasons why Douglas was awarded city status, and very timely actually that we're doing this now, because one of the main reasons was the links that the Isle of Man, and in particular Douglas, have to the Royal National Lifeboat Institution. Sir William Hillary, a resident here, the founding of that just a couple of weeks ago marked its 200th anniversary.
Absolutely, on March the 4th. So yeah, a really significant occasion for them, and lovely that they're going to be part of those celebrations. But there is an air of excitement here, Ben. I think everyone really looking forward to seeing Her Majesty when she comes outside. I can see some school children just walking to the other side of the barriers, all carrying their flags. We've got Douglas Town Band, which is just sitting on the junction of Ridgeway Street and Lord Street. And as we say, we heard earlier from the Ellen Vannon pipes and drums. And honestly, when they played Ellen Vannon and the finish, the crowd here was just, well, wild is possibly an overstatement, but a lovely round of applause and cheers for them.
Something very, very emotive about the sound of the pipes, and in particular when they play Ellen Vannon. It was very much appreciated by the large number of people. As we look up and down Ridgeway Street, many more people have arrived. So we'll be back with you a little later. As we say, the official business, as it were, is now taking place in the City Hall. The Queen is handing over the letters patent. That is the document that officially declares Douglas a city, issued by the monarch, and that is really why she's here today, to hand over that document that will be on display for the public to see very soon. So we'll be back with you a little later on after 1 o'clock with Christy to bring you some more coverage of the visit of Her Majesty Queen Camilla to Douglas City. But in the meantime, let's return you to St Ninian's High School and today's Man in Line with Andy.
Hey, thank you, Ben. Thank you, Beth, as well. And thanks to the Queen as well for interrupting the students of St. Ninian's High School. I just want to go to Alex as well. We were talking while the Queen was doing her stuff and signing the city document for Douglas. Vaping was supposed to be a way out of smoking. It was supposed to be, you know, that older smokers could vape and then get off them. What's happened? What's happened with vaping?
I think originally, because it was marketed as a better, healthier alternative to smoking, but there was never really a lot of research done into it. So people went into that primarily thinking, oh, it's healthier, kind of the same thing. You know, when cigarettes first came about, they thought, oh, it's not bad for us. Then later they found, obviously, it was. I think the issue with our generation, mainly in vaping, is how it's marketed to children. You know, that you see the colour of them, they're like pink, green, blue, and the names of them, it's like blue raspberry, apple, like strawberry. Well, and some are even milkshake flavoured. No, they look like a milkshake, so they're just marketed to children, and there's not really much education on the side effects of vaping. So, you know, if somebody does it and they see their mate do it, they go, oh, I'm going to try that. But they don't have any education on the side effects of it, so...
Rihanna?
I think vaping is quite a big issue, but most of the people I know that vape, they only vape because they used to smoke cigarettes before. So the actual use of vapes, we still don't know all of the effects of it, but it should be used for someone who's trying to get off vaping. But we found, like, you'll see like it's to do with peer pressure as well. Not peer pressure, but sometimes you'll be with a group of people and they'll see their friend vaping and they'll be like, oh, just try it just once. But then they start getting addicted to it and they're like, I might as well just buy my own one.
There'll be listeners listening to this, Rhiannon, will say that happened 70 years ago when people used to pass cigarettes around in the bike sheds at schools, probably here at Douglas High School for Boys years and years ago. So peer pressures have always been around, but some people, older people, are a bit perplexed why vaping has caught on, because it's just not good for you.
Yeah, I think it's like kind of normalized now to vape when it shouldn't be, especially in youngers. I've seen like children who look about 10 or 11 with vapes, and I just think there's not enough education, but it also could be an environmental thing.
Where are they getting vapes from at that age?
I'm not going to lie to you. I've been walking through town and I've seen children go up to people and say, can you please buy me a vape or can you buy me this? But I think parents need to start having more control of their kids. And even if the parents don't vape, it's quite important to educate your children because it's like a trend now. So if I was a parent, I'd be like, this is going around. But if you're going to do it, at least think about the negatives or at least be honest with me about it so then I can help you go through that, because addiction is very real and instead of getting support, children are just getting told off. So I think if they receive proper education and support from people, then it could be solved.
Joanne?
Linking back to where people are getting these vapes from, I mean, I personally, when I was 17, I mean, I'm 18 now, but even back when I wasn't even old enough to buy a vape, me and my boyfriend were stopped on the street by a group of about five kids, and the question was, will you go in the shop and buy a vape for us? We turned around and we were like, no, because we're not even old enough to buy them. We weren't even old enough at the time.
How old were they?
Based off looks, I'd guess 12 or 13, if that. I mean, I know now lots of the kids usually look quite older than they are. I mean, people look at me and they assume, well, I'm 18 years old, but I know people look at me and they assume I'm 22 at least, because I've heard that before. Maybe not the most flattering thing, but it's definitely an epidemic amongst the young people. I'd say lots of people definitely see it as trendy, and as Alex was saying about the marketing, that is definitely an issue, and I know that's definitely something that Rishi Sunak is trying to cut down over in the UK, and I think it's good that he's prioritising that because it's definitely a big issue.
Ariana?
I think to help with that, I've started noticing that a lot of the shops, they used to be like on display, but they're hidden behind like a slide so people can't see them.
So, Alex?
I think most vapes that these people are using are disposable vapes. And in one disposable vape, I've read, it's like 500 puffs, it's the equivalent to 60 cigarettes. And people are going through that. In no time, people go through it in less than a day, thinking, oh, you know, I'm going away on this because it doesn't taste of nicotine as such. But the content, the amount of nicotine that's actually in these vapes is high, as you know, higher than having a cigarette. So to combat the addiction, you know, go for vaping instead of smoking the cigarette, you're not really helping yourself with the addiction.
Who's the Manx, the Isle of Man Chief Minister?
Alf Cannon.
Okay, what can Alf Cannon do to restrict the supply of vapes so that young people aren't at physical harm, really?
I think there definitely needs to be more enforcement within companies and businesses that are selling them to make sure that the people buying them are age-restricted, because some people manage to buy them either with fake IDs or they just go in there and they don't even ask for ID. They just look old enough, so they don't ask for any of that.
What about people who order them from the web?
Well, post Wildman Post, they should, if it is that, then it should be something that's signed for, like an age restricted to sign for, because if you go on Amazon, it says that you do have to normally sign for those things. I think also within education, it'd be good, like during PSHE and assemblies, like Rhiannon suggested, to raise awareness of it and give support to people who are addicted.
And Farah, I mean, is there a PHSE, do they ever mention vapes?
I've never been taught about vapes or anything like that. I think that's the main problem, though. I don't think there's enough research backed up what vapes cause to these people. Like, I just don't think, like, with smoking, yes, there's so much research, there's pictures on cigarette packets. We all know what smoking does, but it's not the same with vaping, and I think that's what's driving people to vape more.
Do you think most young people vape rather than smoke?
I'd say yeah, they do, yeah.
Do you know anybody who smokes?
Yeah, I know people in my year who I mean, I say it's more
vaping.
You don't
have to name them.
I'm not going to name them, yeah, but I know it's definitely an issue, yeah. Just because there's not enough education, you know, people don't know the effects.
So with all the information and the education about the danger of smoking, there are still people who smoke?
I don't think it's to the extent of vaping, but I think there's a very small group, and yeah, I mean...
I just want to talk about going back to law. Joanne, you're saying you're going to read law as well.
Yeah.
And intellectual property is going to be a big thing in the future, isn't it?
Intellectual property.
Verifying and enforcing IP.
Yes, a very important topic right now, actually. I'm not sure if anyone listening knows, but recently the original depictions of Steamboat Willie, which is from Disney, the Mickey Mouse, essentially, the first showings of Mickey Mouse have recently been released into the public domain, which essentially means anyone can either use that. So if anyone listening would like to profit off that back home, feel free to, because Disney will not see you because they no longer
that rule, is it 60 years?
It's 70 years after the death of the original author.
Right. Okay.
Which is definitely very important. I mean, a few years ago, we saw the release of that horror film. I think it was shown at the Palace, actually, the Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey thing, which was essentially a horror film about Winnie the Pooh killing people. this isn't a movie review, so I'm not going to really give my comment on the quality of that production. But it's definitely something that people need to be more aware of nowadays, sort of leeching back on how that's going to affect the original source, because I'd say the next generation is probably going to see pictures of Steamboat Willie on near enough anything, when people my generation are going to know that that's not true to the original artwork.
Anyway, let's talk about opportunities on the Isle of Man for young people on the Isle of Man. You got a view on that?
Yes, I do. So now, as lots of young people know who are in my similar position, when you apply to university, you need a personal statement, but you need things to put on that personal statement. And now on the Isle of Man, law isn't really offered as an A-level, which is unfortunate, but it's also good in the fact that I've been able to explore other options as well. But to go on that personal statement, I ideally needed work experience. So I and many other people my age who want to go into law went around going, please, law firms, please let us into your law firm to do some work experience. But a lot of what we heard back was sort of things like, we can take you in your second year of university.
And this was for work experience?
This is for work experience, yes. So I've got a section of my personal statement where I essentially explain my interest in law, and I talk a bit about what I did for my work experience, which I did with Jim Travers. So if he's listening, thank you very much. You're greatly appreciated. But yeah, I definitely learned an awful lot. Spent a lot of time in the court. But yeah, just was an excellent experience, and I think all law firms out there need that opportunity.
Alex?
Yeah, so going back with that and with COVID, there used to be a scheme in place where you would do work experience whilst you're in year 10 and 11, but after COVID that stopped. So through school you'd no longer do work experience, and for most university courses, for me I want to do medicine, you have to do the work experience if you want to have any chance at all at being accepted into it. And trying to find that work experience, as Joanne was saying, especially on your own, as there's no longer any schemes put in place to help you in the work experience.
And why did that that's a few years ago it disappeared, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, I'm honestly not too sure why it stopped after COVID. You didn't really hear anything about it. We just kind of got told it's no longer a thing, and that was it.
So if you want work experience, sort it out yourself.
Yeah, you do. You have to get in contact yourself.
Okay, well, that's fine if you're organised and you're disciplined about it.
Well, no,
but not everybody is.
It's not even that. I mean, I'd say I'm organised and disciplined, but I still found it difficult to find work experience. I think for most people who have work experience, it's because their parents know somebody, or, you know, they have relatives or relations in that.
Where did you go?
Costain's Pharmacy, but again, that was through, like, relation. Otherwise, I would have found it really difficult.
Okay, Hudson?
I know Junior Achievement have just launched, if you guys want, just the job that I am, and it's basically a thing that allows Junior Achievement and you to work together to find a place to go and have work experience or to get a job, so that it is available now. I know, did Junior Achievement used to run it within schools? Is that something that...
I think it's just new. Is it new?
I think it was originally like a government website thing to do with education. I don't think Junior Achievement ran the old work experience thing. I think what you're talking about now with JA, that's only came out really recently, so we haven't had a chance to look at it, and it's not been mentioned to us at all, like, within school.
Okay. Who's passed the test here? Who drives? Nobody. who's learning to drive here at the moment? Rionia, how many lessons have you had?
I've had quite a few. I'd say I'm close. I can drive right, but I can't park. That's the problem. So, like, I'm really good when it comes to driving, but when it comes to parking, don't get me wrong, I can park, but it'll take me, like, 5 minutes and, like, three mental breakdowns.
How much are driving lessons now? Who pays for them?
My mother. Okay. I think she just wants me out of the house more, so...
Okay, Hudson, how much are driving lessons?
Driving lessons were £40. They've just gone up to £45.
£45?
Yes, yeah.
Is that for an hour?
For an hour of a driving lesson, yeah.
How many have you had?
Too many, put it that way. I can drive, I just need to do my theory.
Have you taken your test yet?
No.
So you're hoping to do that?
Hopefully, yeah. I need to get my theory done first. Right. I had my theory booked the other week, but I had to cancel it because I had another thing. And yeah, I couldn't get that done, but yeah.
Whose car do you drive?
My mum's. Okay. Don't have a car. Okay. I think I'm better than most drivers on the island, though. A few weeks ago, is it Athol Street, the one-way street?
Yeah.
I saw somebody driving the wrong way down there in a BMW. So I'd say if I took my test now, even without my theory, I'd pass. So...
Do you drive, Joanne?
I do not personally drive, but that's mainly because I'd rather save my money so I've got enough money to support myself at university, because when I go to university, I'm obviously going to have to get a job to support myself.
But have you got a job now?
I don't right now because I'm trying to focus on my academics. So I do all essay-based subjects, which essentially means I need to learn an awful lot of content. So I do sociology, English language, and... business studies. Whoops, forgot my last subject.
Okay. Farah, do you drive?
Yeah, I'm learning to drive. Not currently passed yet. Same as Riona.
How many lessons do you think you've had?
A lot. Yeah, like everybody else, just too many.
Do you have a job?
Yeah, I do have a job. I work at Marks and Spencer's.
Oh, when? Well, weekends is that?
Just do a Saturday. Yeah, all day.
Okay, and what do you do there?
I work in the cafe. Yeah, it's quite stressful, I'd say. I didn't realise how popular Marks and Spencer's was until I started working there.
Is that your first job?
That's my first job, but I have had I was lucky in the fact I did get to that work experience just before COVID. I did a week of work experience with my mum in the pharmacy up by Governor's Hill, so that was good. But other than that, yeah, this is my first job.
Okay, so when you've been to London and done the apprenticeship, will you come back to the Isle of Man?
I don't think so. I think I'd come back for family, but I think in terms of work, I don't think so. No, I think I want to look to a different country, I think.
But where do you want to go? Any ideas?
I mean, ideally, Dubai would be nice. That would be a nice place to go. Somewhere hot and somewhere just, you know, somewhere that just has good opportunities and just not as limited as here, I guess.
Okay. Alex, when are we going to see you in the House of Keys?
Well, hopefully once I've done my degree, I've got the medicine degree, I'm a cardiologist, and hopefully then. I think I would actually like to apply for MHK role.
Yeah, well, you have to apply to the people and they'll vote for you. So
yeah.
What would be your pitch, Alex Cowley, MHK in 5-10 years' time? What would you say to the people of the Isle of Man?
I'd vote for Alex. Yeah. I'd say I'd listen to everybody's needs. I think I've experienced, you know, all different circumstances, so I have quite a good understanding. I try and make housing, well, we are trying to make housing more affordable.
So. Okay. All right, that's fantastic. Thanks to Hudson Sale, to Joanne Hewitt, Riona Zalman, to Farah Iqbal Corkill, and to Alex Cowley today. We've been live at St Ninian's High School with a bit of Queen Camilla in the middle. Thanks to Matty Cunningham and to Howie Kane. Thanks also to Lauren Berry. I'm Andy Wint, and we have been live at St Ninian's.
WINT